Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hi everybody, welcome back to the Intercooler Podcast with me, Dan Prosser, Andrew Frankel, my co-host. This is episode 204, magazine style today, Andrew. There's yes. An awful lot that we want to talk about. We have just had a Formula One Grand Prix that we will discuss, but actually we're starting this week with news about us, because late last week, the Intercooler's new app went live. So it's been up there a few days. If you haven't downloaded the app yet, just go and check it out. Go to the App Store, search the Intercooler. You'll find it. Actually, the Apple App Store is not very helpful. It'll show you the listing. And if you've already got the old app, it will just offer you the option of opening it. Ignore that prompt. Click on the listing and find the button that says update. And you can get the new app in seconds. Now, if you are a subscriber through the website, you just need to log in using your existing details. If you subscribe through one of the app stores, just head to the settings page, use the option that says restore. And as long as you use the email address that's connected to your app store ID, you'll be in. And you can create a new password as well. Again, that takes seconds. And if anyone has any issues whatsoever, email us. You can find our email address on the website and we'll help you as quickly as possible. But the new app's great. It looks beautiful. It's
I was going to ask, why is this? I mean, it's incredibly important to us. Why should it be important to people who are very used to using the app that we've had for the last goodness knows how many years? What's different about it? What's better about it?
So it does look better. It's a much more stylish app, which I'm pleased about. Articles carry many, many more photos. So, you know, particularly when we go out and shoot cars and we use some of the best photographers in the game, we get beautiful photos, don't we? And so it's brilliant to be able to make the most of those on the app now, like we could on the website before. The comment sections are now fully synchronized.
I mean, perhaps we should explain that the app that we've had until now, which was very good, we didn't have any particular problems with it, but it was, it did live an entirely separate life to the website. And the problem was, if you imagine it, us like a sort of small boutique car manufacturer, using somebody else's platform, you can clothe it and you can do this and that to it, but it's not really yours, and you are always limited by somebody else's self-imposed hard points. And we got rid of all that. This is now our app, built from scratch by us, the way we want it to be. So it's much more functional, it's more flexible, and it's frankly the app we would have had if we'd been able to have it when we first did it.
So we
that makes sense.
Exactly right. I agree with every word. So it was a white label thing before. This is now bespoke. It's custom built for us. And that means that we have much more flexibility now. So the app that people will hopefully go and download right now is version one, really, isn't it? And we can now make changes to it as we wish. We can add functionality. We can. I'm looking forward to seeing what people suggest. So this is just version one, and as we go, it's going to evolve. We're going to make it better and better and better, because we now have the freedom to do so.
And because it is completely simpatico with the website, comment on one, your comment will appear on the other. It was always, I mean, goodness knows what it must have been like for our subscribers. It was frustrating for us that, you know, somebody could make a comment on the website, which couldn't be seen by people who are using the app. And when we replied to that comment, the same happened. It would appear on one, but not the other.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't matter what you comment on. It'll be a it'll be seen across both platforms, as will our replies.
Yeah, which is the way it should be. So it's a huge upgrade. We're really pleased.
Yeah.
If anyone has any issues at all, we're here ready to help. Now, this is actually just the first of two upgrades that we're making to our infrastructure.
Yeah.
The next will come next week. It's a change to our payment provider.
Yes.
It gives us Apple Pay and Google Pay.
It's so important.
On through the website, which means people can just sign up in seconds, literally seconds.
Wherever you are.
As long as you are.
As long as you've got your telephone, you've got your credit card on your telephone. Yeah. You don't need the credit card with you. You don't need to go upstairs to get it, or if you're in a friend's house or you're at work or you're in a train station or wherever, and you just fancy giving us a go, taking out your 30-day free trial, just do it.
But the other advantage of our new payment provider is that we get to do some quite funky things. For instance, and I'm not saying this is going to be available from day one, but we can do a referral scheme. So existing subscribers can save money on their subscription by referring a friend.
Yeah.
And there's other bits and pieces like that. So it's a really good, solid upgrade.
Again, it's us being able to do things the way that we want them
to be done.
Yeah.
It's a huge upgrade. It's going to improve the experience all around. When this next upgrade comes in early next week, just after the Easter break, most of you won't have to do anything. Some of you will have to look out for an email in your inbox and click a link.
Yeah.
Straightforward. Really simple. So there we go. I hope you're enjoying the new app, and we're here if you need any help whatsoever. Australian Grand Prix, Andrew. I wasn't up at 3:55 a.m.
Oh, I was. I was there.
Rubbish.
Matchsticks propping my eyes open. I may have watched it a couple of hours later.
Yes. We're not going to dwell on it too much. I don't think it was the most exciting.
I don't think we're going to dwell on it, but there are some interesting things that have arisen from it.
Oh, yes.
Certainly. Firstly, Red Bull are not invincible.
Yeah. That was a surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't know if Max was having trouble before his car expired allowed Carlos through.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you believe, but we are certainly meant to believe that, you know, the problem was there was a brake that was locked. I mean, the thing is he managed to keep up with Carlos with a brake that was locked on?
Yes.
I mean, which is a bit ominous, isn't it? Because it just makes you wonder just what the result of that race would have been if the car had been functioning normally. But yeah, so he was struggling with that from the start, and I guess it just got hotter and hotter and hotter, and then eventually went bang, as these things do, and that was the end of his race. I'm not going to dwell on Red Bull, but I think, I mean, they must be seriously wondering about keeping Perez in the car now. I mean, I can't remember how many seconds back he was, but he was like, I think he was like 40 seconds off. He was such a long way back. He was behind the McLarens in a Red Bull. It's not good enough.
No.
He's a lovely bloke. I mean, everybody says he's a really good guy, but, you know, good guys, you know, that's not what you need to win a race in. It's just, I don't know. If I was there, I would be so frustrated. A, because that obviously has, I mean, of course, Red Bull will win the constructors' hands down, so maybe they don't care, but it does have a material effect on that. But it also means that there's no one to protect Max. He's not doing his job.
No, it's not good enough. No. In that massively dominant car, it's not okay. But Carlos Sainz, 2 weeks ago, he was on the operating table.
Yeah.
Appendicitis.
Yeah.
And now he's just gone and won the Australian Grand Prix.
And one of the things I found most admirable about it was, I think he was just being completely straight, but he didn't make a big deal. I mean, there are other drivers who I guarantee you would have been, you know, pretending they couldn't get out of the car, slumping here. And he just went, yeah, it was a bit awkward for the last few laps, a bit of pain, but, you know, nothing that was going to stop me. Yeah. He was just completely matter of fact about it. And and he said he was a bit rusty, didn't he, and sort of FP1, FP2, but it came back to him. And then he went off and, I mean, I wonder how pleased Ferrari are they've just fired him.
This is the extraordinary
and also,
thing.
And also, you know, and again, you know, you and I are both big Lewis fans, but, you know, Lewis is, you know, they got problems with the car. But, you know, we're now three races in which he has been comprehensively outperformed by his teammate. I wonder whether Ferrari are beginning to wonder whether they've made the right decision. I put a little poll out on the TI Twitter account about who people thought, not wanted, who people thought would score more points for Ferrari in 2025, Charles or Lewis. And I think the last time I looked, it was somewhere between two-thirds and three-quarters thought that Charles would score the most points. So, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And Sainz hasn't got a drive.
Sainz hasn't got a drive.
A bloke who can do that.
Yeah, he will. I don't know where. I don't know what's going to happen. But, but he'll be on the grid.
Wouldn't he be a great number two for Max?
Yeah.
He'd keep Max honest, wouldn't he?
Would he want that?
Well, no, he probably won't. I think he thinks he's entitled to, and probably rightly thinks he's entitled to a top seat. But what top seat is there available which is going to give him the ability to win races?
What about Fernando to Mercedes for a year? Carlos to Aston? Number one status?
Yeah, but is he going to win races in an Aston Martin?
Who knows? I mean, they've got that new factory online now, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. I mean, it's a gamble, but I guess anything that he does.
Mm, yeah. And also, if they chuck him 15 million euros a year,
yeah,
maybe that will sweeten the deal a little bit.
But if you put him in a Red Bull, you know, I don't imagine he'll be quite as quick as Max.
No.
But he'll push Max. And if you push Max, maybe Max makes a few mistakes. Maybe he has to stress his machinery a bit more. Maybe Max has a few more unscheduled moments, a few more things go wrong with the car. I think that, okay, to put it this way, I think he would win more races as a number two at Red Bull than he would as number one at Aston Martin.
Yes, and he'd probably do a stronger job than Checo.
Oh, night and day.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any comparison.
Mercedes having a shocker.
It's terrible, isn't it? It's really interesting, though. For the previous two seasons, they said, we've gone completely the wrong way this car, even though they decided to continue with the philosophy of the second season. And this time, what they're saying is, we've got a really good car, we just can't make it work. That must be so frustrating.
Is it really good? There have been glimpses, haven't there? There have been glimpses of speed from that thing in practice, in testing sessions. Yeah. But you never really know in those. And it's when you need a competitive session to actually see how quick the cars are. And in those, they've been nowhere.
And also, you know, we're only three races into a 24 race season. So they're still all to play for. They could still turn it around. And as I've said so many times this podcast before, nobody develops a car through the course of the season like Mercedes-Benz does. So there's clearly lots to play for. But the time will come, if things don't turn around reasonably soon, where Red Bull will be so far ahead, they'll begin thinking, well, it's already a lost cause. So maybe we start thinking about next year.
And then that's 3 years where they've just been
off
the boil. Amazing, really, given how dominant that team was for so long. But they've just never got their heads around
this.
But
it does happen, doesn't it?
Regulation
it does set. Happen. Yeah, it happened to Ferrari. It happened to Red Bull. It's happened to Mercedes now.
It does happen.
You get these. It's cyclical in nature.
One of the big talking points was Fernando Alonso.
Yes.
And his his very robust defensive driving.
Yeah.
/ brake testing George Russell.
Yeah.
How do you see that one?
I see it very clearly. I think it was unacceptable. I think it was complete on a circuit like that where there's nowhere to go or very little place to go. At the speeds they were going at, which was a long way into three figures, when you're going around, I mean, you know, there is tough, there is robust, and then there is just dirty driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he has form.
My goodness. Yeah, there's plenty of footage out there.
It's not the first time it's happened.
No.
And, you know, he can say what he likes, but, you know, there's been quite a lot of data published. I think he braked like 100 metres earlier than he usually does.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's indefensible.
Yeah.
In cars like that, when you are that, you know, I'm a massive Alonso fan, which is why it really disappointed me. And I know that He's done it in the past, and people have sort of said, when you're at that level, when you're at the sort of Senna Schumacher level and that sort of thing, then, you know, there are those sorts of people who pay. But, you know, Lewis had never done anything like that. Mm. And I thought it was dangerous. I thought it put George in real jeopardy. We're not just talking about a damaged car. Actually, there was the safety of a human being.
Yeah.
And he must have known that he was going to... And, yeah, I just thought it was... totally unacceptable. And okay, he's been punished for it, but I don't think it's a particularly... He's got some points on his license. Well, they'll disappear, so that effectively isn't a punishment. He's got a... You know, he ended up finishing eighth or something, didn't he? Mm. But he still finished in the points, which is more than George Russell did.
Yeah.
So George has still been punished for something which, you know, for a problem which wasn't of his creation. And, I mean, what should they have done? How about George gets one free kick in the nuts?
I think that's fair. But it has to be televised. Yeah. It has to be televised before.
He has to stand there. I mean, and he can't wear steel cap boots or anything.
No, just race boots.
Just race boots.
Yeah.
Fill your
boots. Fill your boots. But it's half an hour before qualifying for the Japanese Grand Prix. It's televised. Yeah, I think that's fair.
There is a certain sort of justice to that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought George was very composed about it. Mm. Because initially, I don't think he realised, because I guess he was just so completely bamboozled by the others, but initially when he was, I think he was still in the car, he said, "I'm sorry, I lost it."
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think what happened was that he just saw Fernando coming towards him so fast. Mm. That kind of made him lost. I don't know whether he lost downforce on his front wing or what. I don't know the intricacies, the ins and outs of it. I suspect there will be more info to come from it. But goodness me, if he did just lose it, he could be forgiven for it under the circumstances.
And the thing about Fernando's driving there is that a driver is entitled to adjust their approach to a corner to try and get a better exit, even to try and compromise the pursuing car's line through that corner. But you're not allowed to break 100 metres earlier than you have done every other lap.
There probably isn't a rule which says you can't do that. But no. 100 metres in Formula One terms, I mean, he could probably have stopped the car before reaching his actual normal braking point. Mm. And I think that there is a responsibility, I think, frankly, among all people who race cars, whether it's, you know, idiots like me doing it at an amateur level or full-time professional racing drivers, to behave in a way that is not going to recklessly endanger the safety of your fellow race drivers.
Mm. Yeah, and he did do that. There's no question.
In my view.
Okay, that's the Australian Grand Prix. Different topic then. Last week was a busy old week for blue-blooded British luxury car manufacturers.
Yes.
It all went on, didn't it?
It did.
It started with the news. Was this on Thursday morning? I can't remember. That Adrian Hallmark was leaving Bentley's his post as the CEO of Bentley.
Yeah.
And we all wondered why.
Yes.
And then half an hour later, we found out.
Yeah, he's gone to Aston Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sad for Bentley. Mm. Clear, well, I say this, I don't know this, but given that there has been no succession, and normally a company like Bentley, if there was something big like that was going to happen, they would want their succession planning all sorted out long before a word of it ever reached the public.
Yeah.
And right now, obviously, as is always the way with all companies where this happened, Adrian has already left. There's no notice period to work out. He has gone. There'll be gardening leave and that sort of thing, and that's completely normal. But at the moment, Bentley has no CEO, which is not something that Bentley would have, not a situation that Bentley would ever have sought. I'm sure that someone will be appointed very quickly and everything else. But, I mean, that does suggest that it was not something that Bentley saw coming from a great deal of distance off. And Adrian has done, you know, an incredible job at that company. He's been there 6 years. Bentley's response to COVID was absolutely impeccable. You know, they did everything that they could. They've been active in all sorts of other areas which haven't got... you know, anything to do with making cars, like diversity and inclusion, and they've done, you know, very, very important, impressive stuff there. While at the same time, you know, transforming sales from something like 10,000 to 15,000 cars a year during Adrian's tenure there, making record profit after record profit for the company. You know, he's not a person that they would want to have lost at all. Mm. And their loss is unquestionably Aston Martin's gain. You know, let's remember that Aston Martin is on their fourth CEO in as many years. So Andy Palmer, Tobias Merz, and then Amadeo Felisa, and now Adrian Hallmark. Again, that is not something that any company would wish to happen. You know, CEOs, what you want is to do what Adrian did. You want them there, and you want them to bed in, and you want their vision to be allowed to play out over time. You don't want constant change. And because every time you get a new one, you know, some new person comes in and goes, well, yeah, that's all fine, but actually I want to do it this way.
Yeah.
And so much of the legwork of the previous incumbent, and quite often there are egos involved and people just change things because
they feel they need to.
They feel they need to, or they just want to, or you know, whatever. And so you get periods of instability. People don't really know which way is up. And so hopefully, I mean, Adrian is 61 now. So I'm imagining that he would think, well, I've got a good few years in me yet, and that he will stay there. And, you know, I think Aston Martin is regarded after many turbulent years to be on an upward trajectory at the moment.
Yeah.
And that Adrian would hope he could accelerate that process. I mean, there is, of course, the issue of, you know, he will be, you know, in Lawrence Stroll, you know, the main man, the bigger shareholder. He is an uncompromising and at times, I'm sure, not the easiest person in the world to work with. And, you know, that relationship has to, first and foremost, that relationship has to fire. And if it doesn't, then, you know, Adrian has to be allowed to do his job, the job that he's been hired to do. And I hope very much that he is. And then if that is allowed to happen, I think, you know, the future is very exciting.
Mm. So there's been a huge amount of change at Aston Martin recently. So Amadeo Felisa came in and overhauled the cars.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I mean, he was always a sort of, when it was quite clear that Merz wasn't going to last, they needed someone, a very reliable, sensible pair of hands. And Felisa, let us not forget, was head of Ferrari.
Yeah.
Oversaw a lot of interesting, the engineer to his boots. Mm. I first met him when he was, I think he'd done the engine on the F355 or something like that. That's the first time I ever interviewed him. That was back in the mid-90s. But, you know, even when he was 75 when he arrived, and he's 77 now, knocking on the door of 78. So it was clearly he wasn't going to be around forever. And I don't mean that in a clinical sense. I mean that in terms of he's not going to want to do a job like that forever. It's unlikely to. So he was always, I mean, I always perceived him as a stopgap. And I always wondered who was going to come next. And I just never saw... I thought Hallmark would finish his time at Bentley.
Yeah, he's a Bentley man, we all thought. And
well, he'd been there before, don't forget, because he was there, you know, back when Bentley were racing at Le Mans in 2001, 2003. Their marketing director was a man called Adrian Hallmark. And then he went off to JLR and to do a few other things. And then came back again.
But you can see why Hallmark was an attractive option for Aston Martin, can't
massively.
You? Everything he achieved over at Bentley.
I think they've done. They played a blinder.
But it's a different challenge now, isn't it, for him?
I think Adrian is a, and I know Adrian a bit. That's not true. I've known Adrian for decades. He is a man who likes the challenge. I do wonder whether part of his motivation for leaving Bentley was he kind of felt that he'd done the job he went there to do.
Yeah,
the company wasn't in great shape when he turned up. And he got it into great shape. And if you are that sort of person, I wonder whether he just thought, well, this is such a good opportunity because actually Aston Martin is such an amazing brand and it has been through so much stuff over so long. But maybe all the building blocks are now in place. And maybe this is the challenge that I need. And so I'm going to go there and I'm going to do for Aston Martin what I did for Bentley. And I'm going to put it onto a long-term, sustainable platform of excellence. And, you know, what you want to do in your working life, the best way to secure your legacy is to take over an amazing brand, which is in trouble. Because, you know, then you look at, when it all turns out for the best, you look brilliant.
You do.
And I suspect that's what's going on. Mm. And I think he's probably timed it very well. I think Aston Martin, I'm sure, are very happy. And I wish him all the best.
We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, it's not just Gaydon and crew
that
was spitting out news last week.
It's Woking.
Woking
too.
As well.
Yeah.
Now, you'll have to explain the significance of all of this, because it can be difficult to understand what the sort of ownership machinations mean for the buyers of a manufacturer's cars, for the enthusiasts. But now the Bahrainis, the sovereign wealth fund, has total control of McLaren Group.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this wasn't something which I didn't even see a sort of press release or anything about it. There was something went out on. So Michael Leiters, who is the CEO of McLaren, put something on his LinkedIn about it, saying that the Bahraini Sovereign Wealth Fund has bought out all of the McLaren Group's other shareholders. Mm. Now, that's really significant, because the McLaren Group is all of McLaren. So it's the car company, it's the race team, and it's all the other companies.
It's the technology company.
McLaren Applied Technologies and things like that. So it's all. So it's basically everything that has a McLaren badge on it is now owned by the Bahrainis. So why should we care about that? Well, it's interesting for one specific reason. Michael Leiters, who's a smart guy, like Amedeo Felisa, who we talked about just now, ex-Ferrari, very, very clever bloke. He said to me, he has always been open in a way that, frankly, previous CEOs of McLaren have been less open to doing a deal with another big car company. Mm. I have made mention in the past of the fact that, if you look at the sort of four big British blue blood super sports luxury manufacturers, you look at Bentley and Rolls-Royce, and you look at Aston Martin and McLaren, generally speaking, Rolls-Royce and Bentley have done really pretty well, and Aston and McLaren have had
their struggles,
to put it mildly.
Yeah.
And I've never thought that it's particularly a coincidence that the two that have got through have been the two that are supported and owned by massive automotive OEMs, and the two that have struggled haven't. So what has this got to do with the Bahrainis? Well, simply that it's very difficult to do a deal like that when you've got so many other vested interests, all of whom may or may not appeal to. If you've got the whole thing, you can do what you like.
There you go. Yeah.
You can do what you like. Michael Leiters has been open about the need for McLaren to have, people will call it an SUV. I think it'll be an SUV in the same way that a Ferrari Purosangue is an SUV, which is not an SUV, but a more practical four-door family car. And you can't get that from your carbon fiber mid-engined, that's simple. So you need somebody else's platform, because McLaren isn't going to. Yeah. Well, I mean, Aston Martin went and developed their own platform, do the DBX, which I think a lot of us were very surprised at the time. But they've done an amazing job, because you don't hear horror stories about DBXs. No. You don't hear about things falling off them or anything else like that. So that clearly has, and it's far and away their best-selling car, and I think it will be regarded as a big success at Aston Martin. So maybe that could happen. I don't think for a moment that it will. Not least because Michael Leiters has been very open about, what he has perceived to be the need to have a partner. Now they can go and get that partner. Mm, mm. And so I wouldn't be at all surprised. I wouldn't frankly be surprised if that partner hadn't already been lined up. Who's it going to be?
Well, that's right.
I mean, okay, I genuinely promise you I have no idea. Mm. But do you think who would be most suited to it? Well, you look at the sort of the traditional options. So you look at Mercedes-Benz, well, they've got a big shareholding in Aston Martin. You look at Volkswagen or Audi, well, they've got Lamborghini and they've got Bugatti and they've got Bentley and other. BMW. Mm. It would. So if you look at the BMW portfolio, which is BMW, Mini and Rolls-Royce, well, there's, McLaren's not going to get in the way of any of that. It's British like the other two. It's a proper supercar manufacturer. There is history, of course, with the McLaren F1 and its wondrous 6.1-litre V12 BMW-designed V12 engine. to me, sitting here in a podcast studio with you without any idea of the ramifications or the financials or the strategy or anything else, it seems to make perfect sense. Yeah. But who knows? But I hope it's someone, because I genuinely think that McLaren, for all its troubles that it's been through, could have an amazing future. But I just don't see it attracting the technology and the investment that is going to be required for it to get there without someone holding its hand.
Mm. And in theory, that now becomes easier to do. So
yeah,
let's see how that one plays out.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's move it on. We're doing What Goes Up, which is our semi-regular segment where we look at what's going on in the market. Yeah. And this week we're talking about performance bargains under £10,000. Good heartland stuff for the podcast.
Love a performance bargain.
Oh, yes. Now, we work with Pistonheads because Pistonheads has an online auction platform. And I've picked out a couple of cars that have gone through the platform recently and one that's coming up. And I just want to talk about them with you briefly. They sold a 2005 Porsche Boxster 987. This one is an interesting car, actually. It was a standard Boxster, but it had been engine swapped. So the engine from the Boxster S had been installed.
Yeah.
A slightly later car as well, actually.
Yeah.
It had done 120,000 miles, but the engine was a bit newer.
Yeah.
Two owners, sold for £7,850. And I'm just beginning to think a 987 Boxster. And that's concurrent with the 997, 911, which a lot of us think is peak modern 911. Yeah. Less than £8,000. Boxster with a Boxster S engine. That would be lovely, wouldn't it? I just wonder how these cars feel now, though. I don't know if you've driven a 20-year-old Boxster recently. Do they sort of hold up?
I think with these cars, so much depends. And this is why I just want to see the history.
Yeah.
I would want to pore over the history. Because I think a car like that, if it's been looked after, I wouldn't worry too much about the mileage. I think it could be fantastic. I think the spectrum of possible outcomes from a purchase like that is vast.
Yeah.
If the car's got the history and you're confident in it, I think it could be, you know, for, what was it, how much? £7,000, £7,500?
Yeah, £7,850.
£7,850. I mean, so much car, so much great driving dynamics. Yeah, you can have an absolute ball.
Lovely engine,
like
manual gear shift.
Yeah,
gorgeous car. And you're right, it's about the condition, but also the condition of things like bushes, dampers, tyres.
Yeah.
Because I can well imagine that if one of these cars hasn't been looked after, it would feel baggy.
Mm.
It might feel a bit sloppy, which is not how it should feel. It should feel drum tight, shouldn't
it? But you might take the view, if that was your conclusion, that, you know, £7,850 is not a lot of money, and you're going to allocate yourself a maintenance budget, which would still be nothing compared to the depreciation you get on a more modern car. And you're going to spend, you know, £1,500, £2,000 a year, and you're just going to sort it out over time.
Yeah.
And just really derive a lot of pleasure from getting that car back to being as good as it could be. Mm. And I think that when you are dealing with cars that are that affordable, that's a really sensible and legitimate approach to take.
Mm.
And at the end of it, you will have a car which is, you know, so much better than the car you bought. You'll be able to show everything that you've done. That will probably have a very positive effect on its value. And in the meantime, you get to knock about in a lovely old Porsche.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. So another one, Also 2005. So a mini John Cooper Works. This is the R53, which is the original one.
Yeah.
So the supercharged car, not the later turbocharged car. This isn't the GP. Remember the GP with no rear seat?
And how can I forget?
A bit wild.
Yeah.
This is the mini John Cooper Works.
Yeah.
Really sweet looking car. And actually, as time goes by, I think it's apparent that the first of the mini era minis, BMW era minis, looked best.
Yeah.
It's a really lovely design.
I think they will always be the ones to have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Supercharged engine, distinctive soundtrack.
Yep.
I haven't spent a lot of time driving those cars.
They were really good.
Yeah.
They were really good. Mm. Yeah, I can remember when the first Cooper S came out, thinking, yeah, that's a really good, fun, in its own way, modern interpretation of what a Mini should be. Obviously, you know, twice the size and twice the practical and everything else, but just different and high quality and just really good fun to drive. How much is it?
So this one had 63,000 miles, one owner, so lovely condition car.
Wow.
6,850. But a decent Cooper S, so not a John Cooper Works, is around $4,000 or $5,000. So there's a bit of a premium for the John Cooper Works one.
I think I'd just have the S.
Would you?
I think so.
Mm. If you could find a good car.
Yeah, if you find a good car. I mean, if it saves you a couple of... If the John Cooper Works is like half as much again, you know, at that level, that's actually quite a lot of money.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
I think so. You pay about $4,000 for a nice Cooper S.
I think maybe $5,000, something like that. Yeah, that would be a lovely thing, isn't it? Yeah, again, I'd like to knock around.
Right now, I would just like to go and drive one of those and just reassure myself that my recollection, because it has been a while, that my recollection is correct. But I think that would be a cracking little thing.
Okay, well, how do you recall this car? Year 2000.
Yep.
Peugeot 306 GTI 6.
Oh, yeah.
So this one on Piston Heads, it's just gone live as we're recording this. It ends on this coming Sunday. So it is live. If you want to go check it out, it's on the Piston Heads auction platform. They have shot a video of this car as well, which you can watch on Piston Heads YouTube channel. In the photos, it looks immaculate. It's done 75,000 miles, but it's clearly been looked after.
It's fine.
Such a pretty little car.
Yeah.
Is it a Pininfarina? The Pininfarina design was the convertible,
wasn't
it?
That was a convertible, yeah.
Yes, okay. But the hatchback is a gorgeous looking thing.
Yeah.
I've only driven one relatively briefly. How are they?
I have a memory of those cars, which may be a completely false memory. Maybe someone can tell me, is that the steering would turn less in one direction than in the other.
Oh.
Because of the sixth gear of the gearbox.
Yeah. Oh, that's weird.
I hope that's true. They were fabulous things.
Yeah.
Oh, they were absolutely brilliant. I mean, absolute peak Peugeot hot hatch brilliance. Wonderful things. But I think all the same rules apply. You know, cars like that may well have had quite a tough life. You just got to really, really check them out. You just got to, because, I mean, I know, and you know, people who have, for instance, bought 205 GTIs, which have looked kind of superficially okay, and they've just turned into money pits, and they end up getting very cheesed off with them, and they get parked up and don't get used again, and they just become nightmares. So I know we say it with all old cars, because it's true about all cars, but some more so than others. And things like, you know, old French hatchbacks, which probably weren't built to Porsche standards when they were new, and which probably have had quite a hard life since, a harder than typical life since. You just need to be really, really comfortable that what you think you're buying is what you're actually buying.
Mm.
If it is, fill your boots.
And away you go.
Brilliant fun.
Yeah, fantastic. So if you're looking to buy or you're just browsing, visit pistonheads.com/buy/auctions to see what's live on the platform.
Is there a reserve price on there? Is there a guide price? Do we have any idea what sort of money it's likely to go for?
Let me check. So they think between 6.5 to 7.5.
I mean, given what you pay for 205 GTI these days, you know.
They're 15 or something?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's half the price of a 205 GTI. A lot more practical than a 205 GTI.
Mm.
Probably not a lot less fun.
Mm. Gosh. I know what Andrew's going to be doing later.
Wow.
And if you're thinking of selling your car on Pistonheads auction platform, visit pistonheads.com/sell/auctions. I'll also put links in the description of this podcast so it's easier to find. And if you do go and check out the platform, and if you are selling your car with them, just remember to tell them that the Intercooler sent you. That helps us a lot. Please do that.
Yeah.
So we're running out of time, but...
Ooh, blimey, really?
We are. So okay. I just want to talk about my BMW M2 long-termer.
Oh, you're soon to be X.
It's Monday. It goes back on Thursday. So my time with that car has almost come to an end. It's amazing how quickly 6 months can go, isn't it? They just fly by. So we wrote a story. We co-authored a piece, didn't we?
Yep.
Where we swapped long-termers for a day. Mm. And that went live on the app and website a couple of weeks ago. And we've also got a video coming, which will be on our YouTube channel very soon, so people can see what we got up to that day.
Yeah.
But because it's the end of my time with the M2, I just wanted to discuss it briefly. Mm. I think I'm going to see if I can take it for one last blast, one last proper drive before it goes back on Thursday. I might even shoot a little video. But I just want to share summary thoughts, I suppose.
Can I ask you, first of all, because it's sadly, or maybe not sadly, I don't know, it seems to be what people most want to talk about.
Mm.
How has your view of the looks evolved over 6 months? Have you got used to it? Do you like it? Does it annoy you even more now?
There are angles where I think, well, it does look tough. It does look purposeful.
Yeah.
Particularly from like rear three quarters. Mostly I think it's, I don't love the looks, and I think it's a bit of a shame. I think that it comes down to the styling, front and rear, very blocky, quite heavy-handed styling. Yeah. I don't love it. And it's a pity because the proportions are right. It has a long bonnet. It's clearly rear-wheel drive from the proportions.
Yeah.
It's got a good low roof line. You know, it's got those swollen arches. It's got good stance. It should look fantastic, like the last one.
See, when I first saw it, I thought, maybe BMW were releasing a lot of their more challengingly styled cars at the time. But when I first looked at it, I thought, well, it's not brilliant, but it's okay. But because I've seen your car quite a bit, the more I see it, the less I like it.
Mm.
Mm. The bits which didn't really annoy me then, I just look at it and I just feel that without an awful lot of effort, it could have been an awful lot better than it was.
Yeah, I agree on the styling. Yeah,
yeah, and just on the styling. Yeah,
there are a couple of other issues with the car. For a compact 4-seat coupe, it's almost 1,800 kilograms, and you can't compare it to an Alpine A110 because it's a bigger car. It's got a lot more power. It's got rear seats, but it is 600 kilograms heavier, 50% heavier, almost.
But it's also quarter of a ton heavier than the previous one.
Yeah, which is hard to get your head around, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, I'm completely in two minds about that. One is you're absolutely right, and fundamentally it shouldn't weigh 1,800. I think I looked up on their website and I saw a din weight of 1,835 kilograms. Maybe it's put on a bit of weight since you got it. The cars often do that. And I just think that is so unnecessary.
Mm.
And I've written this, it only weighs that much because BMW choose for it to weigh that much because they didn't think it was worth going to the effort to make it weigh any less.
Mm.
Because as we know, it always takes time and money to take weight out of cars rather than to put weight into cars. On the other hand, though, when you get in and you drive it, it's still pretty fabulous, isn't it?
It doesn't feel 1,800 kilos.
It doesn't. And you think to yourself, and this is what I find a bit frustrating about it. On the one hand, you're sitting there thinking, how much better even this would it feel if it weighed 1,600 kilos or 1,550 kilos? But on the other hand, you're still having a great time.
Yeah.
It's still fast. It's still composed. I mean, what I find most... Sorry, you're meant to be talking about your car. But,
go on.
Is the way... And I think it's so much is to do with the advance in damper technology.
Yeah.
Is that even, I would say, 10 years ago, if you had that kind of mass in that kind of body... The only way you could keep the body under control would be to tie it down so much that you would end up just ruining the ride quality.
Yeah.
And the fact it is still compliant, and yet it manages that mass so well when you're really driving it fast. And I've driven them on road. I've driven yours on roads. I've driven others on tracks. And I have a very good understanding of how those cars behave. And they are so docile and benign and fun and friendly. They do all the things that you want a car to do.
Mm.
Despite the fact that it weighs 1,800 kilos. I wish it didn't, but I'm amazed at what they have been able to get it to do, given the fact that it does.
It is extraordinary. Mm. It really is. And it's a hell of a lot of fun to drive that car.
Yeah.
And it's not a pure hot rod, but it has this hot rod character, yeah. And there's this sort of thuggish quality to it.
Yeah.
But it steers really well. It's got lovely balance. It is composed. It does ride. It's got a mega engine, that twin turbo straight six. It's a powerful unit, that.
Yeah, but so little lag as well.
Yeah.
It's really, really responsive, and it sounds good.
It really does get going. Yeah. It spins out all the way.
Yeah.
I actually think it's a fantastic car. And for 6 months, it's been my daily. So it's ferried my daughter around, our dog. It's been a bit of a family car at times. It's done long journeys.
Couldn't do any of that in a Cayman.
No. No, you couldn't.
No.
So I think it's fantastic. It really is a very broadly defined car. And I've said many times, it's the best long-termer I've had. I've, like you, I've been lucky enough to run some pretty special stuff. Yeah. But this is the one that I'll remember most fondly.
And also, you know, careful what we wish for, because, you know, we might sit here and gripe, and I think absolutely fair enough that we do. But, you know, this is a car with a straight-six engine at one end.
Yeah.
Driving through a six-speed manual gearbox, powering the wheels at the other end.
Mm.
No other manufacturer makes a car that does that anymore.
No. Even four-seat coupes or sports coupes with usable rear seats and a manual transmission. My car's got the manual. Yeah. There aren't many of those. Honestly, you're talking Ford Mustang, Toyota GR86, which you can't necessarily buy at the moment, maybe an M4. Yep. BMW M4,
more,
it's Big
lot
Brother.
More money and, a lot more money. And to me, not as good a car.
Yeah, agreed. And maybe some sort of 911. But again, you're talking 100 grand, aren't you?
Yeah.
And the rear seats are not great.
Are not usable. Yeah. So I think it is a... I think we're going to miss it. I think we're going to miss it, and we're going to miss cars like it. Because they are not long for this world.
And so as I bid farewell to my M2, not really my M2, I need to think about what I'm going to replace it with. There's a plan.
Oh, go on.
There's a plan.
I genuinely don't know what he's about to say.
I'm actually not going to tell you.
Oh, okay.
Nor am I going to tell anyone listening or watching.
Oh, okay.
But you'll have to stay tuned, because I need a car. I need to get around.
Yeah.
So maybe another long-termer. Maybe I'll buy something. Maybe I'll get something new, something
old.
You
know what you're going to do, don't you?
I do.
So when do we find out?
I've driven it.
You've driven it?
Mm.
Oh, bloody hell.
Mm.
Okay. Wow.
But I'm not going to give anything away right now.
I am completely in the dark.
Well, they're great. There you go. We've run out of time, so we have to wrap that one up.
Yeah.
But thank you to everybody for listening and watching. Please remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel if that's how you're watching this. If you're just listening via a podcast app, hit the follow button or the subscribe button. It means you don't miss an episode, and it really helps us. So please do that, and make sure you come back again next week.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.